Now and Again is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcasting Network. For all things Cage, Keanu, and more, head to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. It's late 1998. Ocarina of Time is released on the Nintendo 64. Hugo Chavez is elected president of Venezuela, and a tiny company called Google starts up in California. And today, it's Now Volume 1 on the Now and Again cast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode, Volume 1 of Now and Again, the podcast about mixtapes and memories. With me today is my co-host for most of this run. This is Nico Vasillo, writer of the Demon Hotel, all-around general creative son of a bitch. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
As soon as I started this project, I messaged Nick because there was no one I could think of that would be more fitting to take this ridiculous, stupid journey with me.
As soon as I saw the track list, I got a jukebox hard on, so it was perfect.
So, start off, we're talking about Volume 1, Now That's What I Call Music, released November of 1998. Nico, where are you in 1998? I mean, I know the answer to this, because the answer is, like, sixth grade English class next to me, but where are you as a macro idea in 1998?
To blow your mind, I'm pretty sure if it's November of 98, it's gotta be seventh grade English
seventh
class.
Seventh grade, you're right. You're right.
Right? And where I am is, I was, of course, on my very personal angry at the world journey of coming out, which I decided to make the slowest, most drawn out thing ever. And so everything on the radio was about my pain. And if it wasn't about my pain, I couldn't do it.
Well, we're only about 2 years away from actually literally everything, every male voice on the radio being about my pain.
Yeah.
Or my nookie. Or my freak on a leash of some kind.
Gays just do it first.
Yeah, well, and they do it way better than any of those things that I mentioned. But we'll get to those in future episodes for sure. So what we're going to do here is we're going to just kind of go track by track, talk about the song, the video, memories from that time, if it brings up any. It's kind of a free-form thing. We're just going to kind of go. And I do want to preface this to the audience just by saying, like, we might do some nostalgia busting on this show. It's okay to like something. It's also okay to not like something.
It is absolutely.
Like, that's cool.
Yeah, it's super okay to like stuff. I think, you know, one of the things that always cracks me up is when people are like, ugh, that song. And I just want to be like, statistically, based on your age, you bought it. So just like, yeah. Check yourself.
Yeah, I also like, it's cool. Like, please don't send us death threats on Twitter if we say that this song that you loved when you were 12 is kind of shit today. Like, it's cool that you like that. I like some garbage.
I would actually prefer all of my death threats over Tumblr.
Guilty pleasures, those are out the window. We're going to be open if we love these songs. And we're going to love some songs that maybe 12-year-old us would have been like, why do you like this song? I'm going to go play Magic the Gathering.
100%. You really can't talk about 90s pop music in the face of top 40 in the 90s without really talking about the cheese factor.
Oh, yeah.
It's important to remember that that's kind of fun. That's kind of cool.
Yes, absolutely.
You wouldn't know all the words if it wasn't.
It took me probably until I was 19 to stop taking like the music I listened to seriously.
So seriously.
But once I did, man, music got so much better.
It did. I am literally the biggest fan of Kesha I know. I'm obsessed with her. I just want her to rain her glitter on me. And that's okay, man. It's okay. I'm a cannibal. Rah.
Yeah, I've seen Lady Gaga live and consider it possibly the best show I've ever seen. We saw Carly Rae Jepsen together like 3 months ago.
And so, a couple years ago, we saw Nelly Furtado on the Loose Tours. We like our pop music.
Like, you can like things, unless they're Chris Brown. If you like him, you're a bad person. Anyway, track one of Now, Volume 1, the first one, Janet Jackson's Together Again.
So this one's kind of a touchy subject for me because I up there with Kesha is Janet Jackson. You know, I think Together Again is actually one of the best-selling singles of all time, and it was at one point, if not still. It is one of the defining songs of her career, and it has something in common with a lot of other major sellers that I would notice. Things like One Sweet Day by Mariah Carey. It's that idea, and that's another big record holder for longest number one. It's up there if it's not still. It's that idea of everyone's lost someone. It's the universality of pop music best presented in a way that we can all handle. Not everybody goes through romance. Not everybody longs for someone. But we all miss somebody. And that's, I think, one of the reasons this is a great way to introduce the idea. Now is going to be universal. We all fell in love with one of these songs at one time or another. Mm-hmm. I think it's really funny that this is just about the only uplifted song on her album about massive depression.
And it's about people dying to AIDS.
Yes, it is about people dying to AIDS, which was a huge thing for her. So much so that when she actually recorded a song with Beanie Man many years later, who had dropped the F-bomb, but you know, the bad one for gay people.
F-bomb.
The gay F-bomb. God, that sounds like a club. So... Yeah, she was with Beanie Man, who dropped the gay F-bomb, and she got some pushback because this song was such a big deal. Yeah, I think it's a great song. Everyone should check out The Velvet Rope. It's a classic.
I remember liking this song at the time. Like, this was a good song, and it still is. I was surprised how much it held up and how much more I liked it now. It's so good.
She's an artist who, if you listen to her discography, she's actually set the tone for pop music for many years. You know, you wouldn't even think about it, but Control by Janet Jackson turned 30 on my 30th birthday. By the way, Janet, I love you. We're kismet. And
she's definitely listening to this, though.
So. Oh, she is, right? Because that's why she keeps moving my tour dates. She keeps rescheduling the tour because now she's having a baby.
Women, am I right?
Oh, man, more babies in the world that can keep making music because that's a talented family, you know what I'm saying? But, so, yeah, beyond the fact that this song has survived and has stayed so successful all this time, another thing that's very interesting is there's a second version of this song, a ballad version of this song that was only released on a single, and it also has a video. It's a much more private and personal video.
It's in like an apartment, right?
Yes, exactly.
I found that in my research, yeah.
Really, you know, it was the era where you could not turn on MTV without seeing her beautiful red hair. It was a very definitive time. And, you know, I think one thing that occasionally gets forgotten because of stuff like Nipplegate and the bad period is that Janet Jackson was the defining black woman for pop music for many, many, many years. And when she decided to celebrate
her family in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And when she decided to celebrate her heritage and where she really came from in so many ways with The Velvet Rope, really embracing her hip hop vibe and crafting this very big R&B idea, this concept album, I think Together Again being the linchpin of that and being such a huge hit is why things like Now had to exist. Because this album is incredibly explicit. There is a song that is just her having phone sex that ends with, "Your coochie gonna swell off."
Okay.
And this was such a huge hit. She can't have possibly sold that to kids. But, I mean, let's not forget, Janet Jackson was When I Think of You.
Yeah.
Before Janet, period, which was so sexually explicit, she had Let's Wait a While. Which was literally, let's wait a while before we go too far.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's finger banging herself to ladies on songs. And that's intense.
Pulling out titties at the Super Bowl.
Titties at the Super Bowl.
Man, that was such a thing.
It really was.
We're jumping ahead like a couple, like 4 years if we talk about this.
Nipplegate.
But we can, that was, seeing a lady's boob on TV was such a big deal.
There was a costume
thing. Little did they know
thing.
The internet was a thing, and... I had seen, like, more boobies than all of my ancestors combined at that point.
Yeah. And there's worse to see than Janet Jackson's, that is for sure. Note, a number of these people on the Now records do still show up. Yeah, there's a couple of people you're not going to see, but several of these artists are either still making music or contributing to media in some way.
Lots of production in liner notes, you know, some of these names throughout these next couple of albums you'll be seeing.
The next song we're about to talk about that's actually the funniest one to talk about, the production.
And so. That was a great segue. I'll just close by saying, like, yeah, this song really holds up. The beat is incredible.
Really?
The worst thing I could say about it is maybe that, like, ballady intro goes on a little too long, but that's only because I want to get to that great beat. And
yeah,
her voice, the mixing is actually fantastic. Her voice is really out there in front, but not in that over-compressed kind of way
which
that
is rare
a lot
for
of
her.
Pop music is in general.
Yeah.
And that it's even with YouTube's compression, because I was listening to it through there. It's just a great song. It really, really holds up. A song that, I mean, I'm not even going to say doesn't hold up, because I didn't like this song then. I don't like it now. As Long As You Love Me by the Backstreet Boys.
A huge element of their signature sound, some of their early American work. Guys like the Backstreet Boys were pretty big in Europe before they were big here. Really, that's where the pop boy sound kind of got solidified.
And it's worth noting that Now, in general, we'll dabble in and out of the history of it or ideas of it, because there's not a lot out there about it. It's a British invention first that goes back to, like, the early 80s, like, two album releases of these compilations of pop songs. And so when some of these artists are very obviously, like, attempts to get American traction for British artists.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it fails miserably. I'm sorry just to interrupt. Go on.
No, no, no.
What you were saying about Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, and Europe.
Those guys were all written and produced by a gentleman by the name of Max Martin.
Was he the big fat dude?
No, that's Lou Pearlman, and he actually
He's in jail as hell, right?
Yeah. No, I don't believe they found him yet. He escaped to some island.
Really?
At one point, he was on the run.
Okay. Doesn't look like a guy that could run very far.
I would imagine that's why he used a boat.
Yeah. But yeah,
he was
fuck
like
that guy.
Captain Molester. Those poor guys. You know, they just wanted to bring. I mean, I'm not even kidding. They just wanted to bring joy to the world with their songs. And like, nobody wrote more of their songs than Max Martin. And that guy has gone on to win like 20 Songwriter of the Year awards, starting back then, and as recently as Ellie Goulding's "Love Me Like You Do." Everybody thinks Dr. Luke is a thing. Max Martin was the thing and still kind of is. And songs by the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC in their early days are really where he cut his teeth.
Max Martin, hopefully a better person than Dr. Luke, allegedly.
You know, the only thing I've heard that I'm not crazy about is he defends Dr. Luke. But it's hard when, I would imagine they know each other. I would imagine they're friends. And that's asking a friend to say something. And it's not that that's not expected, not that they shouldn't, but it's not necessarily the context he knows him in. I think it's really interesting that As Long As You Love Me was actually the second American single for the Backstreet Boys. They had already had Quit Playing Games With My Heart,
yeah,
which
makes sense.
Not just a more underwhelming a chart performance, but kind of a more underwhelming song. This was the first example of like a dynamic vocal approach for them. With Quit Playing Games With My Heart, it never really goes above that na-na-na-na-na kind of like, you know, cool,
yeah,
we're dudes, we're singing together.
And that's really my problem, and this war that many lives were lost in will certainly come up throughout these first
volumes. NSYNC All The Way. I don't even know what war it is. I'm not fucking around. NSYNC All The Way.
I will not take up arms for the Backstreet Boys. I was very much on the NSYNC side of this fight.
Also, if you have to have a backup, 98 Degrees, I'm throwing it out there.
Okay, you
those
can take them
sing
as your emergency tag team partner.
Thank you.
I'll take O-Town in the cage.
Many great memories of singing O-Town at my 25th birthday.
Yep.
Drunk as anything.
Yep.
Some
of these, we'll talk about the karaoke implications of some of these songs for sure. Because now might as well be a karaoke list.
That's why I said jukebox boner, man.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about the Backstreet Boys NSYNC War, and I'm so glad you brought it up because I was trying to find a really appropriate way to segue into it. Nothing divided a classroom like who was which pop. Now, like, I know today it's all about, you know, trendy as F, but, you know, reality, let's take the reality back to where it was. Screen printing and graphic tees were really big back then, and everybody had a screen printed shirt of Nick Carter with his jaw slightly open and to the side, trying to look complicated in thought and just looking vaguely confused by what a photograph is. And then you had, you know, the NSYNC shirts where all the guys are kind of like, ha, yeah.
Oh, there was so much wacky. Younger. There was so much like, look how wacky we are
we're
in these
fun
boy band videos.
Oh,
it
yeah
happens in this video too. They each get their moment of like a Carrot Top-esque prop comedy that is just fucking embarrassing.
Oh, it's so bad.
But Backstreet did that, I felt like, personality-wise, I think it carried over to their songs as well. Backstreet Boys songs sound a lot more clean. They sound like they're five guys trying to hit all their notes to get a perfect score.
Oh, great.
And all of the lyrics are very like, love me?
Except when they become deeply self-referential in a way none of the others do.
But by then, I feel like it's over.
But see, so
there's a grittiness to NSYNC that carried them the whole way. Well, it carried them to like the 50, and then it carried Justin Timberlake
the rest.
Yeah, he's the one. He Forrest Gumped that to the end zone.
So this is on the same Backstreet Boys album with Quit Playing Games With My Heart.
Backstreet's
and
Back.
Backstreet's Back was a bonus track later released, everybody. Because there's another song called Backstreet's Back.
Hmm.
Or something like that, and it's the same lyrical idea. They had a lot of self-referential songs in a way the other artists didn't. Now, I want you to think about what we're trying to say. They had a song where they just celebrated their backness, and so
But they never went anywhere. They were new.
But I need you... Exactly. I need you to understand what we're saying is the guys in One Direction have a song called The Only Direction Is Our Direction. We're One Direction. Go our direction.
Oh,
that
no
is what the Backstreet Boys essentially did. If Justin Timberlake was like, my name's Timberlake and I wear Timberlands and my best friend is Timberland, and it's that level of embarrassing, and we let them get away with it because you just don't understand. The 90s were a very different time for
oh, yeah,
pop music.
Yep.
You didn't have to be gritty yet.
So does that make One Direction the gritty reboot of the Backstreet Boys?
God, I can only hope.
The Nolan-esque Backstreet Boys?
Oh my God, it's the Nolan-esque Backstreet films.
Oh, man.
Oh, dude, I'm so excited.
Quit playing games with my heart.
Yes.
Now, my question is, do you think that at the time that they put these bands together, because in this video is very...
It's very chair dance.
It's very Nick Carter.
It's very
And the
Nick.
Guy who looked like...
Brian Luttrell.
Okay, sure.
He was the approachably pretty one. So to give the girl perspective and the gay perspective, because that's where you need me here. One of the things that set NSYNC apart from the Backstreet Boys was NSYNC... there's only one way to put it. If... The Backstreet Boys were Fonzie, and NSYNC was a new and improved Chachi. Mm. They were younger, they were a little bit edgier, one of them had dreadlocks, and then, you know...
When you could still do that as a pop star.
As a white pop star.
Yeah.
So the Backstreet Boys tended to trend just, you know, a little bit older. They had lower voices, yeah. And Kevin kind of looked like a model, AJ was wild and had to go into rehab, and... Tried to go solo first, and
one of them met their wife on the set of this video, so they were fucking.
They were like it was very we are sexually active adults. Whereas NSYNC, you know, Justin Timberlake is like 16, and you can see him get a little itchy in the "Tearing Up My Heart" video, as if a chest hair is trying to push into his tank top. Where, by the way, he is very much suns out, guns out for a 17-year-old boy.
Well, that's what's tearing up his heart is the razor burn on his chest.
I would deeply, deeply believe it because they tried to keep these. Boys as long as they could. You actually had alternatives to these guys. You had the older, sexier ones. You had 98 Degrees, who every single one of them could bench press the rest of them. Mm-hmm. You had LFO, who were a later addition to this argument. But the thing about LFO is they were very much Abercrombie pretty boys.
Literally,
to the point where they literally referenced it in a song.
They liked their girls and their Abercrombie and Fitch.
And they would
But not Chinese food. No, RIP that guy.
Yeah.
That is
Rich
hell.
Cronin, he was the ones who said that he was super molested by
Jeez.
Lou Pearlman.
God.
Well, what a way to segue back.
Yeah. This song's just not that good. It's vanilla as hell. I get it, but I don't want it.
I would even be real. You know what? Once the Backstreet Boys start thinking Halloween is a good musical inspiration with Backstreet's Back, and then, you know, that sound stuck with them. Whereas one of the things that did set NSYNC apart was for their third album, Celebrity, they worked with an artist and producer named BT, who...
You're a big fan of that guy.
Huge fucking fan. The guy invented the stutter edit, so get on board. They worked with him, and they wrote Pop, and they started beatboxing, and...
Oh, yeah.
The lyrics are... Dirty pop.
Yeah,
and if you
pop.
Want to really hear how far
exactly
NSYNC goes, they go to a song called Gone, and that is a stark acoustic, gut-wrenching ballad. And the Backstreet Boys really never move out of this song
except
for the Halloween stuff.
Even that album, take that NSYNC, the singles from that time. You have, like, I Want You Back, which, you know, that's kind of the same wavelength as stuff like this. But then, like, Tearing Up My Heart is like, we're in this relationship, but it's not perfect, and I'm sad. And that's 10 times more nuanced than anything Backstreet Boys are doing.
Absolutely.
And then they have Bye Bye Bye, which is like, fuck you, kiss off song. Backstreet Boys never even rose to that level.
And you know what's really funny? The Backstreet Boys had the greatest selling album in a first week ever, with Millennium selling 1 million copies in a week. Oh, what was that goddamn song? It was so big.
Stay tuned 12 episodes from now when it comes up.
It was, no, it's gonna kill me, man. It was,
I don't know. Larger Than Life?
It's the album before that?
I don't know.
Oh, God fucking damn it, man. It was, I can see the video. It's, they're on an air. Now I can see that we're falling off where it used to be.
Yeah, that's
no
this,
matter
isn't it?
The distance, I want you to know the deep down inside of me.
You Are My Fire.
My One Desire. One desire. I want it that way!
Oh. Which, you win.
It sold 1 million copies in its first week. And they were considered like the all-time record holders, and nothing would ever beat them. 6 months later, NSYNC sold 1 million copies in one day.
Mm.
And when a month later, the Backstreet Boys were on TRL, and they were like, so let's talk to you guys. You know, there's a boy band war going on. And they were asked, what one song is just driving you crazy and you never want to hear again? One of them immediately said Bye 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 with a frown on his face. That is everything you need to know about the Backstreet Boys.
Who had a person bail first? Did Nick Carter go first, or did Justin Timberlake go first?
No one bailed first. It was actually none of them broke up till many years later. I believe the first member to officially leave one of the groups was Kevin, the eldest member of the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, I think he's the one that met his wife on the set of this.
Yeah, I believe
if I'm not mistaken.
He quit first, and they went four people.
You can't be a Backstreet man then. But As Long As You Love Me, it's pretty forgettable, right?
Pretty forgettable.
Yeah. Now, in a couple of episodes, once we hit like 10, 12, now really finds their format.
Oh,
and
truly.
Have a very specific way that they...
There's an order.
They order by genre very particularly. We don't have that right
and
now.
And it transitions, getting ahead of ourselves, but it really does transition through the genres naturally.
Yeah, kind of. They really front-load it with like... We'll talk about it when it comes up, yeah. But we have a rock song at number 3, which will not happen again. After like 6 or 7 for a very long time. Fastball's The Way, which I would say is probably the most famous song and catchy song about a silver alert that's ever existed.
You know, The Way is one of two hits I remember Fastball having. They had
Out of
this,
My Head.
And Out of My
which
Head.
Which is a really good song, and Anna now, so we'll talk about that in the
and
future.
And it's very The Beatles. I really feel like there was a time where... labels didn't understand what... So labels at this point are still like, let's convince parents to buy these albums for their kids by dropping in a few songs for the parents as well. So
yeah,
when it comes down in the car, it feels good. They stop with the need for that pretense because it became much more pop music is aimed at kids. And they really stop needing to worry about bringing in the 40-year-old dad on this experience.
The funny thing is, it'll come full circle... near the end when the only people left buying albums are that person.
Exactly, and everything else is digital singles, so you don't need collections anymore. But The Way is a really great example of what used to be compilation albums. What's really interesting is American compilation albums have long existed because there used to be only the single is good attitude for a lot of artists.
For sure.
And these were a great way to get around that. These kinds of compilation albums became so common, all you had to do was subscribe to Entertainment Weekly, and you would get a double disc of dance music. And it would be called, like, Maximum Dance Party USA Volume 3, The Train.
I feel like, you know, hashtag only 90s kids, but I feel like anyone around our age and a little older will remember those commercials.
Yeah.
You know, for Pure Jam, Pure Moods Volume
Pure Moods,
1.
Dude,
like, that's,
I had Pure Moods.
There's a very famous one of, like, most punk, and it's all like new wave songs, and it's really hilarious and dumb. Dance ones. It's a beautiful. I feel like I only know that from the commercial for like Jock Jams or
for
whatever.
For the record, you should know it from Ace of Base's vastly superior second American album, The Bridge.
Oh yeah, ladies
Beyond
and gentlemen,
the fact that they
this
were
is the man that will argue the fact that you know Ace of Base only has one song. We found him.
Ace of Base is tremendously talented, other than the whole they're actually Nazis thing, which is very true. They really are Nazis down to...
Isn't just one of them?
Well, I mean, it's the songwriter.
Oh, so every song is actually a little Heil Hitler.
A little bit. I mean, my favorite song by them is a song called The Edge of Heaven, and it's all about how I want to go to a place where people are beautiful and I can see the dreams of tomorrow. And I mean... And it's a really beautiful song. I mean, those guys could write and they could sing and they do a killer cover of
Everyone
cool
in
song.
My Heaven has blonde hair and blue eyes.
It's a little intense. But yeah, no, for real. Ace of Base.
The compilation album. Not Ace of Base. Fuck those guys.
Fuck those guys. Yeah, Nazis.
That's when we rewind and we start working backwards. We'll hit them eventually.
Excellent. Those kinds of compilation albums were so huge that you would go to places like BJ's or Price Club, which Price Club... used to exist. Now it's called Costco.
Yeah, Sam's Club kind of thing for those of you in the South.
Yeah, they would have these racks and racks of CDs, and none of them would be anything from the last 25 years. It would be incredible copies of Carole King's Tapestry, and you know, you could find an Elvis collection,
a
Don Henley album, maybe an Eagles' Greatest Hits.
They're carrying Rumors
because of course people think that's classic rock. And I love Fleetwood Mac. Let me be clear.
Yeah,
and,
no, definitely don't send us a fuck you for us.
No, no, Rumors.
We
is literally one of the most important albums of all time. I used to get made fun of for going to high school in my Rumors t-shirt. So these compilation albums existed for things like this. They would have one called like Hot Love, and it would just be famous soundtrack ballads. And then they would have one called like, you know, High Energy, and it would be like Walking on Sunshine.
Jock Jams is probably the most famous. That's not this.
Excellent. Yeah. And this song by Fastball, The Way, is the whole reason that exists. We can get them to do one catchy pop song, target everybody. The album does so quick. Throw it on a compilation, get some more money out of it. It's a great way back then, before the advent of digital sales, where you could get just the song you wanted.
Yeah. You could buy singles, but that wasn't a major market. And then you were still saddled with like a B-side.
Well, and the other thing is, for so many artists, the name Tori Amos is going to come up a lot. So you're going to want to look it up. I'm going to say it slowly for all of you. Tori Amos. She's not Tori Alamaze, but I understand wanting to go there.
She's not the famous Amos.
She's not famous Amos Cookies. She's not Tori Spelling, although I also love Tori Spelling. Tori Amos is a pop star from the 90s, a rock star from the 90s, really, who it was famous for a number of firsts. She had the first digitally available single before a physical single was available. She at one point had the most number of fan sites on the internet dedicated to a single artist. And she used her singles as capital. They were where she would put songs she loved from her albums that there weren't room for, because she would tax her albums out at 80 minutes. Mm. And she would throw the singles on. So her singles were frequently $8.
Wow.
And
it was like getting a little EP then.
Yeah, frequently it was. Several of them are EPs that are singles. It's the Hey Jupiter EP. It's the Winter EP. So, yeah, I mean, really, that's all I have to say about Fastball. A lot of things about other people.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Fastball is a band that, I mean, in the video you can see, like, they're just not comfortable in front of the camera.
They're very
They don't want to be there. They're trying to do a lot of face acting that doesn't work super well. The video doesn't know what it wants to be, so it's just taking them and putting them in, like, band situations.
And it sounds nothing like any other song on the album, so you know there's a sense of resentment for the singling.
Yeah, like, this is a song that these guys are going to be playing at state fairs for
forever.
But here's the thing. I think it's a pretty good song. I thought it was a pretty good song then. I think it's a pretty good song now. I like that surf rock sound.
I do too.
It was out of place at the time. Like, it's not really used now.
No, it makes you think of Rooney, though.
Yeah, I mean, I like everything about it. I like the lyrics. It's a good song. Like, I love that run. Musically, I love that run up to the chorus. That
I was about to say, actually. Yeah, it's so good. It has an unbelievable great sense of melody as a song. You know, for a guy who didn't do too much with the rest of his career, he has a phenomenal vocal performance in this and Out of My Mind.
That's a really good song.
Yeah. I just don't think, you know, the world needed more Fastball, sadly. I think we loved these two songs and couldn't figure out what to do with them.
Yeah, this is an example, and I think this happened a lot at the time, and it was another good reason why Now existed, is definitely from, you know, like, fifth grade to... I figured it out. I'm, like, 3 months away from discovering music for myself. Well, not myself, but, like, music that's not on the radio.
Music that's not you and me in gym class talking about how we really liked The Globe Sessions by Sheryl Crow because our parents both played it.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, like...
However, Sheryl Crow's The Globe Sessions, one more time, let's give it up for The Difficult Kind, one of the greatest vocal performances by anyone ever.
I think the next Now album has my favorite mistake on it, and I'm going to talk about how that's better than any Sheryl Crow song.
Oh, no. That comes in a good fourth place. We'll talk about how that singles. Comes in fourth place. Yeah, I guess I am pulling from album stuff.
So wait, what the hell was I just saying? So my music knowledge is still either my parents' stuff or really now just radio stuff that... Because the radio isn't just pop. You're getting the No Doubts, and you're getting... I mean, we're moving away from grunge... Definitely by now, but you're still getting your Fastballs and the next song, which we'll talk about. But I was gifted this album out of just the fact that I really liked The Way. And, I mean, maybe if I revisited it now, I would like it. I don't know. But, like, I only listened to those two songs.
You know, I had actually my Nana, hey, what's up in heaven, Nana? She passed away and no one knew what to do with her TV, so they gave it to me because that's what you do. You give a 13-year-old boy cable in his bedroom. So I had discovered MTV for myself by this point, and I was really getting into my own music. And one thing that was really cool is my mom and dad were super duper, they're enablers. And so they would literally be like, you want to collect rare singles? That's what we're doing! And, like, they would go nuts making sure I was really happy because I was a really, like I said, I was all about my pain, and my parents just wanted to see me happy. So I had already discovered my own music. I just want to chime in with one thing. Fastball fans out there, because theoretically, like, there's seven of you, and you're going to hear this.
Every song is someone's favorite song.
Literally. I know somebody whose favorite song of all time is Gloria.
Oh, I had to dig for that one.
Yeah, and I literally ask this person every time, because I have to. No one's shitting on Fastball. Fastball is these two songs are great. We just don't think they had more songs. Like these next guys.
Which is the exact opposite of the next band, who, Harvey Danger, Flagpole Sitta. They're a band that I feel like if I went back and listened to that album, I feel like I would love that album. Only knowing this song, they seem like a band that's probably pretty fucking good. But I don't want to.
Yeah, you know, I think this song is for our generation most known for its inclusion in Disturbed Behavior.
Is exactly what I had written down.
Which was a Katie Holmes movie. So you guys, before Katie Holmes was... God, how do I think about it? So there's a very famous child named Suri Cruz, and I'm sure they have a Twitter. But that's all people really, I think, remember this song for, and for the fact that it had a questionable bleep. Toward the end of the second verse, he says, now I'm an amputee, goddamn you.
Yes.
They didn't censor his mouth in the video.
So it's, damn you.
Yeah. And yeah, okay. So it's kind of like, you know, there's this moment where you're like, what is he saying?
Censoring in the 90s on the radio was very lazy.
It really like, was. Oh, like, no, for real.
Oh, shit. What was that vowel that they... Did he say shut up?
Before... Shit. Right? Before everybody
did he say shot?
Taylor Swift was feminism, there was an artist by the name of Alanis Morissette who also toured with Tori Amos. Do you see how that name is going to come up? So, Alanis...
For the bingo card or the drinking game, that will most certainly come from this show.
That really will. So,
ding.
So, Alanis Morissette dated... So, okay, for those of you who enjoy Fuller House, before Fuller House, there was Full House. And Full House had a guy on it named Uncle Jesse. And
no, Uncle Joey.
Uncle Joey, that's what I meant. God damn it. I'm so sorry. John Stamos, I would never forget who you are. I would never forget. Dave Coulier, I do forget who you are. So... Dave Coulier evidently broke Alanis Morissette's heart, and she wrote a song called You Wanna Know. There's a lyric where she says, and are you thinking of me when you fuck her? And the bleep is the worst. You thinking of me when you fuck her? Like, the only thing they take out is
didn't they censor Go Down on You in a theater, too? It would be like, would you
no,
go
No, because the
in
way she says it so weirdly, only certain stations censored it, and MTV didn't censor the video. Because would she go down on you and
self-censoring via really bad aspiration.
After really, really bad delivery. Yeah, you know, this song had that. It had that inclusion in the Katie Holmes movie.
Yeah, God, we tangent that. I think now it's relevant. It's the title music for Peep Show.
Oh.
Which is a fucking amazing show. So I hear that little riff at the end of the song every time I watch an episode of Peep Show.
Real quick, thank you. I have to get in there. Thank you for making me watch Broad City again, dude. That is literal funny. That and BoJack comes back on July 22nd.
Yeah.
So literally, that is like the funniest fucking thing I've ever. So even the music is still valid to today.
Yeah.
The songs on here, even if you couldn't name them out of a million songs on the radio, there's still an example of where Flagpole Sitta has a statement to be made today.
Oh, absolutely.
In a TV show. So
it's what taught me what a zine was.
Even though these songs weren't necessarily famous at the time, were famous at the time and aren't famous anymore, they have this lasting effect somehow. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, musically, it's great. It's got a fun bass line, those galloping drums.
Yeah, it's a pretty killer
song. The build-up to that, the drum roll and the paranoia part is great.
The bridge is killer.
It's one of my favorite karaoke jams, personally.
And yeah, the guy, it's another one where the guy sings the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not a great vocalist, but what a killer performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a song that holds up today. Yeah, the next song.
Okay, can I introduce the next song?
Go crazy, man.
This was my first concert.
Wow.
It's actually also, funny enough, my first anxiety attack. My parents...
I'm sorry to laugh.
Oh, no, it's the funniest thing. My parents got me tickets. I'm going to cry talking about it. My parents were such good people, and they got me tickets to see the Spice Girls World Tour, and my mother kept trying to pick me up off the ground so I could see the stage, but I literally couldn't breathe, so she and my dad each had to hold me up in part, because I was so close to Emma Bunton, I'm like still freaking out, it was amazing! So, this next song is Say You'll Be There by the Spice Girls. And
they've never received a better intro for a song. They played the Olympics and came out in like little like, Volkswagen Beetles or like Mini Coopers or whatever.
They did not get this kind of applause.
Yeah, no, this is better.
You know, often imitated, never replicated, frequently laughed at, but always loved. The Spice Girls are really responsible for so much of our 90s conversational slang.
The idea of the late 90s is pretty much entirely attributed to boy bands and the Spice Girls.
Truly, you know... And again, this wasn't their first single. You're going to notice a lot of these artists...
This came out in 96.
Yeah. What's really interesting is a lot of these songs, though, were so... they wrote this album till 99. Let's not
I believe that. Well, I think it took a little bit of time just for it to pick up in America.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is, speaking about singles and B-sides, they had some really friggin' weird singles. B-sides, I mean. They had a song called Bumper to Bumper, in which, at one point, Scary Spice just goes, Bumper to Bumper! For no reason. They have another song called, God, I think it's Spice Invaders. And at one point they say the ingredients.
Oh my God, fuck that pun.
And it's like, no, for real. It's like, they whistle part of it. It's just like. And then they list things about each one of them and their personality.
These are a few of my favorite things via the Spice Girls.
Kind of. I mean, at one point they go.
Or that Backstreet Boys song we were talking about.
They say, like, it's like something like, you know. we've got Ginger, Posh, and Emma, something. And, like, you know, then they, at one point, Scary Spice, because she really was kind of intense, just screams, mix together in a cooking pot, and you've got the Spice Girls!
Holy like, shit.
They had some weird things to them. But, you know, truth, end of the day, Wannabe is one of the most recognizable songs in the history of pop music.
Oh, yeah.
Say You'll Be There is one of the most classic longing for you anthems ever.
I think this is going to be our first major diversion.
Oh, man.
I don't like this song at all.
I think this song is one of those examples.
I'm more of a Two Becomes One kind of guy.
Two Become One, you know, and the radio edit of that, censoring out the explicit sexual lyrics, was one of the first times I found out that any deal that we endeavor, boys and girls feel good together, was replaced
go
by...
Go Good Together.
Go Good Together.
Yes.
No, it's Feel Good Together. The radio replaces it with, once again, if we endeavor, love will bring us back together.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, that's...
It was much more
sexually explicit.
My memory is
all fucked up about this song. I have to go back and... That's not going to be on this, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
But that's,
So, Say You'll Be There
that's
also...
That's a good song. This one.
Say You'll Be There. So, Wannabe introduces the Spice Girls in a really real way, where they use nonsense language, and they rap a little bit, and they talk about who they are. But this is the song...
There is a rap breakdown in this that is just...
Atrocious.
Garbage.
But the thing about this song is the video really introduced who they were. You when you think about the Spice Girls, you think about the video of them in the desert dancing.
Killing fish bowls.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things... I think Say You'll Be There is one of the most classic pop songs from the 90s. Because the thing that all of these songs have in common so far, to be real with you, is everybody knows how to do the... Dream about us together. And, you know, the as long as you, the way, like all of them, you play through them in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody goes when it comes on the radio. Yeah, I want you. Even if you're making fun of it, you join in. It's okay. So Chris doesn't know love, but I mean, it's a celebration
just,
of
this one.
Of
this one
fun
is
joy.
Not the Spice Girls one that stuck with me. It would be Wannabe and Two Become One. This one I didn't even remember until I turned it on again.
Oh man!
And when I did, it came right back.
I argue for all their albums. To be honest, I even like Forever, the album without.
Did you see Spice World? In theaters?
In theaters!
Like, I actually did too for some reason.
Because
I think
it's
one of those,
did.
Like, grandma took me to the movies on a rainy day, and the only option was that.
Hey, I was telling my husband the other day, my husband who colors our comic, Kid Riot, I saw every bad damn movie you could think of, and I frequently went to movies by myself because no one else in my family wanted to see what I wanted to see.
What was the name of that Robert De Niro horror movie we saw together and almost walked out of?
It wasn't Robert De Niro, it was John Cusack, and it was Identity.
Oh, that's still one of my least favorite movies of all time.
Agreed. I saw Eddie by with Whoopi Goldberg.
Is that where she becomes the owner of the Knicks?
The coach of the Knicks.
Okay.
And the owner is like, I only put you up here because you're a woman and you're a black woman and it makes me money. And she says, and I remember, I will never forget it. I'm like, my jaw drops. She just goes, fuck you and that damn horse you ride on. Because the guy was an eccentric Southern millionaire who rode horses. And I just remember thinking, I hope that's like a real phrase and that somebody really had the opportunity to use it. Otherwise, that's not a great line. So I go to ask my mom about it and I'm like, hey, mom, there's this phrase, but I'm not allowed to use one of the words. Can you explain to me what it is? And she's like, okay, just use the word. And I was like, fuck you and that horse you rode in on, as my dad coming into the room. And he's like, do not speak to your mother that way. This is why you can't go to movies on your own. And like all this kind of shit. But no, yeah, I definitely saw Spice Girl, Spice World. If I saw Eddie, I saw Spice World.
My parents actually really fostered the idea of like what a curse word is and how to use it, to the point where now that I'm an adult, like it's totally fine. I called someone a cunt in front of my mother yesterday and she just laughed.
I gotta say, my mom gave me my love of music. When I say that my parents, you know, really, really wanted to see me be happy and they really helped, you know, my music collection and stuff. They really were very supportive. I'm super blessed. You know, most gay kids don't have parents like mine. My dad, you know, when I came out to my dad, his only comment was, I knew you always loved Nathan Lane. I'm not even kidding. my dad was the best sport about that ever. And my mom, you know, was just happy I was a Democrat. So
yeah, having parents that let you do the music you wanted to do and encouraged it, it's important. I mean, we're huge music fans. We've made music for a lot of our lives.
Yeah. Sometimes together.
Like, my father would take me to concerts.
Yeah.
And to the point where he would, like, go and try to, like, get into the music. To the point where I don't think I have Blink-182 on my computer anymore. But somewhere on his, like, old-ass iPod, like, every now and then, What's My Age Again will pop up.
That's hot.
Yeah. He was just, you know, he and I don't agree on everything. But he let me grow up, which was pretty cool.
Parents need to do that kind of thing. You know, my parents did not want to go see the Spice Girls. Let me start that story.
I'd imagine.
You know, my mom and dad. Oh, by the way, my sister, she's a year and a half older than me, and I don't know that we could be more different. So I'm literally inconsolable at the Spice Girls concert, and my sister Julia, Jules, is literally begging my parents if we can leave early, because she's so bored.
But if you're that close to Baby Spice, how could you be bored?
Oh, we were like 50 rows back. I just couldn't believe I was that close to Baby Spice.
I guess we all were shitty teenagers at one point, which would put her about that age, right?
I gotta be real, she still wouldn't like a Spice Girls concert now.
But to be bored in the front row of a Spice, and in the front row of any concert,
50 rows back. Not front row.
But you said you were, wait, when you said you were that close, did you mean like a football field away?
Yes,
oh, Jesus. Okay, well then fuck your story. Like, I thought you meant like you were at her ankle.
Oh, gosh, no. I was, God. I had an anxiety attack because I was roughly a million yards away from a British woman, and that was all I'd ever wanted. So,
from a British woman?
So, that's, you know.
There's a little segment I'd like to introduce to the show called Citation Needed, where we find something on Wikipedia that's just. This is from the Wikipedia article for Say You'll Be There, which is extensive.
I would imagine. So, for Say You'll Be There, the lyrics, which describe the things the group have been through together and how they always have been there for each other, the music video was inspired by films like Faster Pussycat Kill Kill and Pulp Fiction, and features the group as a band of female techno warriors who use martial arts and high-tech ninja-influenced weapons to capture a hapless male. It includes symbols of male disempowerment and serves as an example of solidarity in the group's bonding.
Okay, so citation fucking needed on these points, right? First off, where in the lyrics is anything about them
bonding?
I was about to say,
last time we had this conversation, I decided we should be friends. How much was Sporty Spice being like, hey, Baby Spice, lesbians? Like, how much was that happening that this is about? I mean, because now let me jump in with a reality about the Spice Girls.
Wait, side note, do you think Sporty and Scary were mad about that?
What do you mean?
Well, Sporty in this video gets to be there and throw kicks at the camera.
Okay.
And Scary gets to rap. And the rest of it is all everyone else.
That's a really good point. You know, that's one of the things about
plus, being Sporty is kind of like, there's subtext to that. That's so, not that sub.
Here's the thing. They didn't come up with those names. They were bestowed upon them by a newspaper, which is why originally she was Sexy Spice, and then they later changed her name to Ginger Spice so it would play better with children. You know, the Spice Girls...
I thought you meant Sporty Spice was Sexy Spice.
No,
I'm like, wow, that is a
departure.
That is off the cliff.
One of the... hey, she had a phenomenal solo career. I Turn to You was terrific. She had some really good music there for a while.
I mean, I'm assuming you're implying either from, like, a critical standpoint or from, like, the UK standpoint.
No, I Turn to You was a huge
hit
in America.
Really?
Huge hit in America.
That was...
Turn to You.
Wait, that was Sporty
That's
Spice?
That's Sporty fucking Spice. That's Mel C, man.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And,
shit, all right.
Jerry actually had a successful solo album.
Well, I don't remember them.
It's called the album's called Schizophonic. A couple of the pieces on there were pretty strong.
Posh had the most successful post-career.
Well, Posh made the best decision ever,
yeah.
And she married the concept of soccer. So, you know, the thing about the Spice Girls is they didn't get into any of the It's All About Being Ladies until the second album. Wannabe.
Which was the first album in America, right?
No. Like,
really?
Wannabe, Say You'll Be There, To Become One.
But by the time that caught, weren't they close to the second album in the UK?
True, but the second album was the first, and that came, you know, 3 years later to America as well.
Okay.
It was the first time that all of a sudden the lyrics were all about, because remember we talked
about
how
Girl Power.
Yeah, the single B-sides had Girl Power. But now all of a sudden it was every track on the album. They had hits with romantic songs and sexual songs. You Want to Be My Lover. They had the occasional song.
Oh, wow. How did I forget about that song?
Yeah.
That had to be one of the biggest ones.
They had a song where they rapped, if you can't dance, that means you can't do nothing for me, baby. Implying if you don't have the sexual prowess on the dance floor, you can't have it in the bedroom.
Didn't they each get a little rap thing about how to please them best in If You Want to Be My Lover? You know, someone just rapped about all of them.
Yeah,
probably
if you
Scary,
get with me,
because
you
that's how we're doing
and
this.
Ginger.
Oh, okay.
Ginger rapped a lot, too. She was the backup rapper, and she rapped in Spanish. They only had one song, really, on their first album that had nothing to do with fucking, and it was about their moms.
Well, that's good.
And it's a really great song called Mama. And, like, I remember my mom was like, stop playing this one time. And I was like, is it that bad? And she was like, no, my mom just died. Oh, so, like,
what's up with the harmonica solo in the song? That's out of place and pretty bad.
I don't think
bad.
It's out of place at all. It creates a sense of world music. This was aimed at Europe. It wanted to appeal to many different styles. And so that was their way of appealing to an American audience.
And then, well, all right, sure.
You know?
and then they put Meatloaf in their movie.
And Alan Cumming as the villain, and...
Well, he's British, at least.
Yeah,
Meatloaf is as American as Meatloaf.
I have to... Meatloaf a day. I have to be honest, my husband...
His name is Robert Paulson.
Movie. His name is Robert Paulson. I just think, you know, I think this is a great song. I think the Spice Girls did a great job with it. I think it's a terrific recording for them. I mean, true, they are the only five-girl boy band in... Girl boy band. The only five-person girl group in the entire world who needed backup singers, but...
I don't think the video was inspired. I'll give them Faster Pussy Got Killed, but not Pulp Fiction.
I think Pulp Fiction in the
Mad
most
Max,
surface
right?
way.
Like Mad Max, for
Mad
sure.
Mad Max, obviously. But, I mean, we're talking about people who think the lyrics are about sisterhood and togetherness.
Well, all right, so if you can read the second part.
Of course.
This, you jump down to the writing and recording section. And this is not taken out of context. This is just... writing and recording, and then this.
Without access to Herbert's address book, the group knew nothing of Kennedy's whereabouts other than that he lived in Sheffield. Melanie Brown and Jerry Halliwell drove to Sheffield the day after the departure from Hart Management and looked for the first phone book they came across. Elliot was the third Kennedy that they called. That evening they went to his house and persuade him to work with them. The rest of the group traveled to Sheffield the next day.
That's the start of writing and recording, because the entire thing, even though it's broken down, is told in a narrative format. This
Amazing.
Is someone who 100% has written fan fiction about the Spice Girls.
Absolutely.
But, like, not, like, sexy fan fiction.
No.
Like, stuff about, like...
how they had to fight for the record
label. They're just hanging out in traffic or
yeah.
something. And, like, Ginger, what are we going to do for lunch today?
You know, and I imagine it's a lot of N Media Res storytelling, so it just kind of... Ginger looks sad in her chair.
Sporty puts down her tennis racket.
Right, and goes up... this Ginger moves through, you see, sad. And, you know, Ginger is like, hey, broke up with me. And, like...
Oh, it's all written with, like, the accent.
I would
Lots
believe
Lots of apostrophes and dropped consonants.
Trying to figure out where, you know, the hell Daphne from Frasier is from. And I am so... Listen, British population, I am so grateful for all of your contributions to television. Thank you for Doctor Who. I do not mean to make fun of your accents. Please, you guys do a really great job making fun of American accents. Thank you so much for doing it first. No, yeah, this is a... I'm not even sure what some of this stuff means.
No, but that's because the section before that, which is, I think, that starts the story of this Herbert. And then, like, it just continues through this, like, it's just a narrative
It's
on
a powerful
Wikipedia.
Story. It's the real Spice World
it's
sequel.
It's amazing.
It's Spice Universe. God, that's the sequel I want.
Spice Galaxy?
Spice Eternia.
Spice Space?
Spice Space.
The MySpace, where you have to have a blank spice. Between the Mad Max-ness and the girl power stuff, do you think Fury Road stole from this music video?
You know what? I would rather even say not that stole from this music video, because I figured
it's a remake.
But let's think about it. The Spice Girls created an era of girl power, and they justified the ability of women being able to be multifaceted things. Baby was, you know, Baby. She was cute. She was adorable. She wore the little dresses. But she was also part of a multi-billion-dollar empire. And Sporty Spice... literally said, hey, girls, you can be into sports and also be kind of feminine because, look, I also wear the dresses during the dress numbers. Mel B gave a voice to young black women who wanted to be part of pop music that didn't feel they fit in with all of the other very pressed, very proper black women who had to be that way to be competitive in the music world. Each one of these women gave a little something unique to the overall cultural atmosphere at the time. I don't know that I would necessarily say they stole directly from this for Fury Road, but I would like to say that I think the Spice Girls were a huge part of creating a world in which Tumblr culture could fight for things like the validity of Fury Road.
I mean, I was joking, but, like, you make a good point that Furiosa might not exist without the Spice Girls.
I really think it is a statement on just how... we're going to get to... failed attempts to recreate this in just a moment, but it is really important to understand that while we can make fun of the Spice Girls, the fact that Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Jessica Simpson, Mandy Moore, you know, we're kind of making a joke, but Britney Spears was kind of dance Spice, and Christina Aguilera was sort of belter Spice. Jessica Simpson was good Christian Spice. Mandy Moore was young Spice. They really just recreated the formula and spread it out across multiple women. But there is nothing about the identity of pop of women in pop culture today that we don't owe a little bit to the brave and bold end of 90s feminism that the Spice Girls tried to pioneer in the face of a male-dominated music world.
So yeah, Spice Girls, worth revisiting. I wouldn't say this song, Nick would, but go back. You know, maybe there's some good pop in the Spice Girls,
there's
for sure.
Excellent.
They'll
pop
come
in
up
Spice
again
Girls.
Too. Throughout this. Next one, Casey and JoJo, All My Life. Shout out to my buddy Joe. This is our opening karaoke jam. Only when we have the private room karaoke because, ugh.
Hey, like Mariah Carey said, I like it when I'm laying in my bed bumping Jodeci. For those of you who aren't aware of the insanely awful reference I just made. So before they were Casey and JoJo, they were part of a group called Jodeci, mm-hmm. who was responsible for every bump and grind song that you couldn't attribute to R. Kelly.
R. Kelly, yeah.
And they were just like, In Living Color did a terrific send up, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm sure.
So All My Life by Casey and JoJo was a massive departure for, well, massive departure for what culture understood them to be. This song starts up and it is so over emotional. This song is
it
pure.
It is. It's
maud.
Yeah, yeah. Saccharine is a good phrase for it.
When you're all that I ever know, when you smile, all things glow. You
lots
pick
of
me
thanks,
up when I was down.
Thank God. Like, thank heaven I found you. Thank lot of Jesus-y shit in this song.
And here's the thing: I understand that this is a huge element of R&B gospel crossover from mm-hmm. from this era. And I think it's not that this isn't still a good song. I just don't think it's necessarily aged as well as others on this collection have.
Yeah, like when we do O-Town karaoke, we do it because like that's kind of a good song.
Yeah.
When we do Casey and JoJo All My Life, we're doing it because it's ironic and we're white. I'm like it's not as it doesn't hold up in the as a great pop song. I think because the formula's was perfected before them and has been done even better after them. Like, they're a footnote. They're not on the main road with this kind of music.
And I even think in a lot of ways, it's not a great track. There's bad mixing in places and clear reuses of choruses from
yeah,
earlier.
That's true.
It feels very... I feel like if this was done now, it could be done with some phenomenal polish. But funny enough to talk about O-Town, All My Life kind of did help create a market where All or Nothing could exist. So it's really funny that we're even kind yeah. of almost shooting on this song in the name of O-Town, but it's
direct. I think the song is like directly responsible for like a God Must Have Spent Some More Time on You by
a 1,000,000%.
My least favorite NSYNC song by a country mile.
Oh, truly. I think this song is also, I'll never forget that this song. So, okay, funny story. I tried out for a talent show 1 year at my high school, and I didn't get in, and I was super bitter because I did all of the right things. I followed all the rules, and one of the rules was you were not allowed to sing along to an existing song without the karaoke, and this kid got in and did that, and I got so mad. So that's always my association for this song. Losing a talent show, that's where I was when this song came out.
That's, like, knowing you at that time and knowing that there were definitely talent shows in, like, the elementary school that we went to, like... That blows my mind.
Actually,
because
I have to clarify. It was high school. It was ninth grade. I have to clarify.
And wait, you lost to someone doing Casey and JoJo
in ninth grade.
Two-ish, three years after this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's cuckoo bananas.
This song actually is a huge song in the R&B community. What was for a very long time.
I disagree with you. I think this is a good, not great song. This is a 6.5. That was probably an 8 at the time.
I think the guys from Casey and JoJo are responsible for a lot of songs I unfortunately can't think of the name of. It's one of those cases where if I heard it, I'd be like, ah, that song! Like, it took me 10.5 minutes to remember the Backstreet Boys song.
Which I have already forgotten. I Want It That Way.
I Want It That Way. I actually forgotten, too. I was almost like, dude, As Long As You Love Me. Damn it! You know, I think this song is, it's responsible for Justin Bieber's Baby. I think... We're talking about that level of bringing R&B and saccharine together in a way that R&B had long been a really genuine, beautiful art form that had really not taken hold in mainstream music so much as pieces were plucked from it. This is one of the first songs I can think of where I said it's more like R&B took from another genre.
Okay.
They sort of took the sappy saccharine kind of... The greatest love of all.
Well, the video plays into that, too. The video, there's a scene where, like, you know, even though it's clearly a song about, like, you are the love of my life, I'm so happy I found you, please dance to this song at your wedding.
Yes.
There's shots of, like,
I heard it at the
feeding,
last few weddings I've been to.
Of course. There's shots of someone feeding, like, homeless people. There's one thing that, I mean, I'm sure at the time it just was also to be like, let's bring in friendship. And it's like two girls laying on a bed together laughing, which,
hey, maybe they were being progressive for
like,
my people.
I would like to believe that.
You know, and if...
But I don't think gay people were allowed to exist in public until, like, 2001.
We were allowed to be the punchline of jokes and limericks if our name rhymed with Rick.
Right. After, we're still in a... We're not in a post-Will and Grace world yet. So you guys have to be funny.
Well, right, because we're definitely still in that, you know, we're definitely still in that gays have to be a punchline
phase.
Yeah,
you're stereotypes at this point.
And, you know, let's talk about, you know, the famous gays that we could go with. Paul Lynde, if you happen to be 60 and listening to this. My parents raised me on game shows. I don't have any regrets. You know, George Michael, who wasn't gay until he wasn't George Michael anymore. Freddie Mercury, who was the freak. You know what I mean? When you're talking about the 80s, a good friend of mine, a really good friend of mine.
Boy George,
yeah. A really good friend of mine who's a little bit older than me one time said to me that you kind of had to be part of one of four camps growing up in the 80s. You could be Madonna, you could be Michael Jackson, you could be Prince, or you could be Bruce Springsteen. And your choices were like down-home rock guy, your choices were the diva, the pop king, or the prince.
I feel like it's missing like a
sort of like
a Robert Smith Morrissey new wavy kind of thing.
Absolutely. But those people were always the fringe, weren't
well,
they?
Well, sure, absolutely. Okay, but yes. If you're talking about like a mainstream stars. Thing. Okay, yeah. For some reason I thought you were talking about like the type of person you had to be
music-wise
and that. Okay. I apologize.
You know, when he shared that, well, please, I had no idea either. When he shared that with me, I was like, I can't imagine having not grown up getting to be like, no, I'm not into boy bands. I'm still into Nirvana, and because my older brother gave me a Nirvana CD, so I can't like the boy bands because I know what real music is. My pain, Pearl Jam, Jeremy, la 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 la, 10 Vitology. And like, that's the kind of thing that you kind of didn't have a zillion trillion D years ago. So I think, I don't remember where we started this point.
Well, we started on Never Ever.
We had already moved on.
No, we haven't even moved on to Never Ever.
No,
all my life.
If we were on Never Ever, I would be unleashing a bucket load.
Well, we can. That's a accidental transition. All my life, you know, it's a song that exists. It's almost a self parody at this point.
It's
a song that if it hasn't come up as like a love moment in a Will Ferrell movie at this point, I'd be stunned.
Because you know what? It really was. I remember my sister loving it and getting it as soon as it came out. Actually, like clearly, I remember her needing this CD. I think it was called like Love Always or something. Like it was really. It was like a romantic album kind of thing.
Sure.
And I remember this being a huge hit. But to move on to All Saints.
All Saints, Never Ever. When I was looking at the list, I was like, I've definitely never heard this song. And the moment that the chorus kicked in, I was like, oh, I know this song.
You know this song. So to kind of touch on a really interesting point that we made, this was not the first single off of, Together Again was not the first single off of The Velvet Rope. It was a song called Till It's Gone, which featured a sample of Joni Mitchell and featured Q-Tip on my favorite rap by him ever. It is truly throwback R&B at its finest. Truly just breathtaking work. But again, Together Again was the second single. As Long As You Love Me was the second single. Say You'll Be There was the second single.
Well, this song, again, is clearly a, more so than the Spice Girls, an attempt to... and I know that this song, I know this song, so I
it
got play
hit,
on
yeah.
Z100 in 1998, 1997. But it was clearly... A way for UK to push its stuff on America. Well, and now it used now as a springboard for that.
To make a great point about how you pointed out that Say You'll Be There was already kind of old by this point, All Saints were the replacement Spice Girls because the Spice Girls had already become too much Spice Women. So All Saints...
When did Ginger leave? Do you know?
It was when I saw them. So it was sixth grade.
So she's gone by this point.
She'd have to be.
That's... Really?
Maybe seventh grade? Oh my God, if I had my first anxiety attack because of the Spice Girls in seventh grade, I want to fling myself off a bridge. So their first single was...
Who gives a shit?
I know where it's at.
Never
no, it was a huge hit. I know where it's at. It was huge, man. It was the bomb shit, okay? And
this song is a minute too long because it starts with literally a minute of spoken word.
It is nowhere near a minute
it
too long.
A minute of
I wish there
word.
Were 3 minutes of spoken word afterward.
Get the fuck out of my face with
you
that.
You can tell me to my face. So one of the things I love the most about All Saints, and I think, you know, so what they discovered with the Spice Girls was that the Spice Girls had limited target audience. They seemed to get everyone in that target audience. Don't get me wrong. They said, we want young girls. We got all the young girls. I mean, it was... Bieber before Bieber.
But at the same time, it felt hard to take the Spice Girls seriously.
Now, that's the thing about All Saints. They were specifically an R&B band. They were a little bit sexier. They had a much more legitimate rapper. I unfortunately don't know the women from All Saints' names.
One of them is still a producer.
I unfortunately don't know the names of the women in All Saints, but they legitimately really talented vocalists, pretty excellent rapping. And the thing that stands out the most for me is they were very desperate to make, not the women in themselves, the label was desperate to make sure that came across, to the point where they have a pretty decent R&B interpretation of Under the Bridge.
Wow, ew. I hate the idea of that.
You know what? You need to not compare it to the original, and you need to think of it in a vacuum. They did a really great first album. It was actually creme de la creme for what they were doing. If you liked another artist who was kind of doing the same stuff as All Saints and the Spice Girls, All Saints did it really well.
Well, I mean, like I did like the song, and from someone who did not think about the song since this problem, since Now One, it's a good song. I appreciated, like, you know, their music video. They don't need the choreography. They don't need they're writing on their voices, which is good. I think the lyrics are kind of shit. You Got Me Feeling Real Bad is not a great lyric.
Oh, no, absolutely.
There's one, it's like, the alphabet runs right from A to Z. It's not a metaphor or a simile, it's just a line.
It is, I mean...
But then the next chorus they do right from A to Z, so they're going with the intercontinental...
Well, because they're British ladies.
Yeah. It's just... It's a better idea than it is a song to me.
Okay.
Like, it's... If you had that melody and that music and then just replaced it with something else, I think I'd like it more.
It's, you know, it's... I totally get that. I maybe think Never Ever... I never quite understood why Never Ever was their big hit. I thought kind of every other song on the album was stronger, but I do...
I could see that.
I do defend All Saints. I think, ladies, I wish you were still making music actively together. Sorry you're not. Sorry I couldn't buy your albums alone.
Our next one, Tonics, If You Could Only See.
If you can see. Yeah, it is Man Pain Central.
It took me about 45 seconds to realize that this song was not I Am Everything You Want, I'm Everything You Need.
So, no, that's Vertical Horizon.
Well, and stay tuned for that song.
Right, now they kind of followed Tonic. So this song was one of those 90s alternative songs that, so there was a period of time, guys, before everything was YouTube and YouTube was the radio and, you know, Pandora took its cues from Twitter.
Every band didn't end in Vivo at some point.
So If You Could Only See was kind of like dad cred on this album. It's a little bit more that fastball the way. These weren't pretty boys. They weren't a boy band. This
was the end of days for this kind of music on the radio. There was still this lingering kind of grunge. It's like, well, grunge did a lot for the radio. Let's let them keep doing it. And this is kind of the end of days for that before new metal and just boy bands is going to take over the radio.
And what's really interesting is this is kind of a homogenization of two different ideas that had been running through the early 90s, well, mid-90s, really. You sort of that post-death of grunge,
Pearl Jam doing... It's still got that humbre-dunger underbite
Pearl
voice.
Pearl Jam doing...
like he's singing with an underbite.
Can't Find a Better Man. It's like that meets Duncan Sheik's Barely Breathing, because it's a little bit more sensitive.
I would love more... Duncan Sheik's Barely Breathing and way less even flows. I know I'm in the minority on that one.
No, I'm going to defend Duncan Sheik's body of work. I'll admit his Broadway work has maybe not always been my favorite. But
Spring Awakening, right?
Right. Not a big fan of Spring Awakening, but American Psycho is pretty cool.
Oh, does he have a part in that?
He wrote it.
Oh, shit. Okay.
He wrote the American Psycho musical that's on Broadway right now. It's pretty good.
I've gone back and forth on whether or not I want to like the idea of American Psycho
musical. Listen to it first. It's a lush commercialist. It's really fascinating.
He's
the
guy who I feel
idea.
Like can get what the book was going for.
You know what? And it's also so much. It's a really great show for visual. A big shout out to my friend Tori, who also works at the Demon Hotel. She
not
draws.
Tori Amos.
No, I'm so sorry. Tori Sheehan. She is a stage assistant stage manager, Broadway, off Broadway lady, and she works with us on our comic. And she keeps kind of teaching me what I should know about theater at all times.
Yeah, that's a huge blank spot for me too.
Oh no, I mean, my parents loved that I was gay because my dad was like, finally, someone to go to musicals with, because my sister was always about going to the Giants games, both of them. So
well, now it makes sense why she hated the Spice Girls show from 50 rows back.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Where was that? Was that at the Giants Stadium? PNC. Okay.
PNC Bank Arts Center at Homedale, New Jersey, for those of you not in the local know. But, For real. My parents were super good about letting me go to, taking me to musicals. And I've seen like 100 musicals at this point. It's super great. But she, it's one of those things where I love them so much. Sometimes I have trouble understanding the art form.
Okay.
And one of the things is he uses visuals really well in it. But to get back to Tonic, that's what? All there is to say about Tonic.
It's a bland song.
I believe the album is called Lemon Parade.
Lemon Parade is like 12 lemon parties stapled together.
It's actually just Lemon Grab.
Unacceptable!
It's also one of the last times it was okay to have completely unintelligible lyrics. I mean, do not get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, those verses.
Rihanna's masterpiece Work.
Good God, can I tell you about Work?
I think that song
I thought that song was a joke the first time I heard it.
But if you understand that it's her kind of touching back on her dance hall childhood.
No, I get the idea of it.
Oh my God. I think it is such brilliant writing. So, I think it is. So, but like.
I have a story about Work that ties into this. So
fucking hit me.
We are in the tri-state area, New Jersey. We've had the same big radio morning DJ.
Elvis Duran.
Since we were.
He used to have
kids.
Elliot
or something. He went to like DC or something
yeah.
like that. But that group has been doing pop radio in the mornings since before this Now album.
Yeah.
He's like a
we
legend.
Grew up
he just
on
received
these guys.
Like a Radio Hall of Fame award.
And he's a big homo. What's up, guy?
Sometimes when I would go into work before I discovered.
Before you'd go into work.
When I would go into work.
Oh, shoot. She sings the hell out of that. She's awesome.
Oh, see, I think
I'm not a big Rihanna
like she's
fan.
On morphine.
I'm not a big
it's
Rihanna
like
fan.
It's like Ativan morphine cocktail, the song.
I don't know that I've heard a more emotionally dedicated performance.
Oh, God. I
on the
not
verses.
Agree less.
Check out the verses, man. Nobody right, touched so, me in the righteous. The way she hits. Oh, my God, dude. And when she says, please understand, I'm trying, baby. Dude. I think she sings it like she really means. She has to work harder. She has to work three times as hard as any woman in pop music to be taken seriously.
Not anymore.
Absolutely still. 100% more than ever, because that she's not a big songwriter is a well-known fact. That she can't sing live that well is a well-known fact.
Really? I did not know that.
She's not a great live.
Like Taylor band. Swift level bad live? Or
yeah, in that category.
Oh,
I've
no.
seen some.
That's unfortunate.
I've seen some rough video. I don't think she's a talentless person, but not everybody's meant to move the way she moves
so
and sing.
The first time I heard the song, I was driving into work,
hit me,
and
yeah,
I was
sorry.
Listening to Elvis and the morning.
And the Z Morning Zoo.
And they're not a zoo anymore. I think that's like got a negative connotation these days.
And the Z Morning Collective.
I feel like zoo shows have become like the, oh, it's Nico and the Douche.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's the kind of thing, like, zoo shows are now.
You'll always be my crazy Ira, so.
But, so, they were hyping up, like, the new single from Rihanna, here it is, and then they played Work, and then they came back, and he was like, well, that was different. This 25-year, like, pro of radio, and, like, honestly, like, being a bit of a shill, like, he couldn't even defend that. I think that song is just trash.
I really actually think there's so much artistry to it. I think she's really speaking from a place. I mean, she really does
I think
have
if Drake wasn't in that song, it would be just sewage. Like.
And I think Drake's part is great. I think it's terrific. I wish I had a version with another verse by her instead.
Wow.
I really think she gave the performance of a career. I'm not a huge Rihanna fan by any stretch. I don't even really like Found Love in a Hopeless Place. I don't like Shut Up and Drive. I don't love Pawn the Replay. I think Unfaithful is perhaps the worst song.
Don't you speak ill of SOS. I will fight you.
Oh, no. SOS is a pretty killer song with
okay.
a pretty great sample.
Well,
I think
it's
Umbrella
also, just, it's
is
also
pretty good.
Just the hook from Tainted Love. So, no. Whatever. Yeah,
hey,
Umbrella's
but,
great.
But hey, Tainted Love was just the hook from Where Did Our Love Go?
That's
so
true.
It's all full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just, unfortunately, I think we have gotten so far off topic.
Yeah, well, Tonic sucks, so
Tonic,
that's why.
I mean...
Here's a funny story. They're from Atlantic Highlands.
Oh, they hey, locals!
They went to Red Bank Catholic, as did my girlfriend.
RBC? I teach everybody that goes to RBC.
My girlfriend started RBC in 2001, 3 years after the song, and I just asked her, hey, did they ever cite Tonic as, like, famous alumni? And she's like, who? So there you go.
Yeah. This next one is going to be twice as
okay,
long.
Okay, so here's... All right.
Okay, can we...
So you know how Nick and I just had a disagreement? It's okay to like things.
It's okay.
It's okay to have nostalgia.
It is.
This song fucking sucks.
Well, okay, I want to start with Chris and I had the same groups of friends growing up.
Yeah, this is the most tied to the nostalgia aspect of this show,
yeah.
For sure.
We had, and I'm gonna drop some names if that's cool.
First
names only.
Do you think it's cool?
First names only?
I'm less friends with these people than you are, so go nuts.
Emily, Lauren, Allison, Issa, Jen, and Jess.
You
ladies.
Just outed all of the sixth grade
and
girls
that and
who
ladies
loved this band.
These were some of our closest friends, and man, they oom-bopped themselves to Hanson pretty
oh,
hard.
They oom-bopped bopped a boo.
I make that joke because it's an obvious joke, and I wish I hadn't made it. Can you edit that out?
No.
Hanson was legitimately if we said, okay, how do I, if the Backstreet Boys were Trump and NSYNC was Hillary Clinton.
Why don't you just date the whole episode?
Hanson was Bernie Sanders riding this white horse through the pop election.
Now, you just compared Bernie Sanders to Hanson. You're guaranteed Twitter death threats now.
I just mean that they were the most unlikely. I think they technically came first.
Well, this song is old as shit, too.
Yeah.
This is, we're in 98.
This song is 96 or 95?
This song is like the pop version. There's apparently two different versions.
There's two different versions. They had two independent albums. I believe they were called, if I'm not mistaken, I believe they were Boomerang and Umbop properly.
I'm going to say you know that because of those friends you listed.
I just know everything.
You are Wikipedia.
People call me Nickipedia.
That's pretty good.
It's terrible.
This song is a little old because like mid sixth grade was like the time like hating Hanson was cool.
Yes.
And I didn't like, I knew that that was a thing. I knew I didn't like the song. But people got really... You talked about the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC splitting classes. This was like... It was just so cool to hate Hanson. To hate, like, Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic.
Yeah.
And I never got it, really. I mean, maybe even at that age, I was, like, a young film hipster. And I was like, I like Gilbert Grape. I like Leonardo DiCaprio. But, like, I didn't like this song. So, but my goal in school at that time was to get through with the least amount of people knowing that I existed. I just shut up and rolled with it. Like... I was never trying to fight anyone about the street cred and the validity of Hanson. Like, I didn't give a shit then. I never liked the song. And I've gone back with it for this show with adults willing to, like, reconsider eyes. It's still a shit song. I'm sorry. It is.
So to kind of give you guys a little bit of knowledge on what Umbop is about, I believe it's about the fleeting nature of life and time.
There's only been 30 think pieces because this is how we know it's 96 because there was just a bunch of BuzzFeed 20th anniversary, hey, Hanson's Umbop isn't what you really think it's about articles. Like, who could possibly give a shit?
Well, I actually do also think they're not bad songwriters as
I'm willing to concede that there's probably good Hanson songs, but I don't know what they are.
I specifically think their second major label release this time around has some really great songwriting on it, some really classic rock inspired shit. So I will defend later Hanson, and I will even defend like Where's the Love and Weird and I Will Come
One
to
of
you.
Those songs will show up in the future.
Yeah.
So I will be revisiting more Hanson songs. So we'll see if my hypothesis is true. But this song is just not good.
This song is just kind of silly baby town frolics.
Yeah,
it's little kids having a good time. And ultimately, I think they were super prepubescent and they were super young and cute and sweet.
Well, I think that was one of the big reasons to hate them was less this song and it was more what they looked like. Well, there was a big thing like, oh, the Hanson sisters.
Absolutely.
And like, and they're good looking guys now because a lot of those articles, like,
yeah.
They're all married and they all look normal. Like, the 90s, everyone looked like shit.
Everybody kind of looked like Katie
looked
Lang.
Like shit.
Yeah.
The middle, the singer,
Taylor,
does look a lot like Brie Larson.
A little bit. I see it. Here's the thing, though. I mean, you know, he hit puberty at the end of recording the album, essentially. So his voice changed right after recording the album. And then they had to modulate everything for live performances.
They are not good-looking people in this band at this time.
No, they are.
They had grown into decent-looking people. So it's weird to me.
Very smooth, androgynous, cherubic.
And that's why the sixth grade girls loved them, because they were so unthreatening.
Yeah. And I think...
Which is fine.
I kind of feel like there's not more to say on Hanson, almost, because I think... You know, when you grow up, three men who are three of the most hated men in celebrity culture, that sucks.
That has to.
I mean, I don't care if you're bajillionaires.
But I was going to say, they're sleeping on piles of money.
I mean, piles and piles and piles. Well, let's question that. Because, you know, Kelly Clarkson made nothing from American Idol.
Yeah, that's true.
And TLC made nothing from Crazy, Sexy, Cool. I can't imagine these three young boys from Tulsa, Oklahoma, which
that's
at one
point
had an enormous gay and Satanist population, were thought very highly of. And they were probably manhandled a bit by their label. I feel like there's a lot of good to say about Hanson. I feel like there's a lot of bad you could say about Hanson.
They rhyme life with strife in the first verse, which I think every songwriter who was at one point 12 did. And
yeah.
That's just, but we didn't put it in a song that went to every radio station in the world.
No, because we weren't lucky enough to be discovered.
That's true. We talk about how there's like no Facebook at this age and there was no social networking. But like these kids, just everything was out there. And
every
how
level,
much does that suck?
Layer.
I mean, can we just agree that this song is kind of like 45 seconds of really good pop stretched to five times longer than it needs to be?
I agree. It's about a 4.5 minute song of a hook. And
yeah.
it's not, you know, It's not a full song.
If someone said, like, I was 12, I loved Mbop, I'd be like, that's fine. That's cool.
Yeah.
But if someone was, like, 28, 29 and was like, I just heard Mbop and I love it, I'd be like, oh, you have bad taste. Sorry.
Yeah, I really get that. I do think it's meant to be universal, but I think there are better ways to get it across than nonsense lyrics.
And that's the thing, like, those articles about, like, this is what it's really about. The thing that, like, Crack.com makes its fucking living off of. If I don't like something, and then someone informs me, well, like, did you know that this was really a way you could read it? That doesn't change the fact that I like it or not.
Right.
It's just like, okay.
Good to know.
Sure.
It's Cracked is actually where I found out that Ace of Base were Nazis.
There you go.
There you go.
Zoot Suit Riot. Remember when,
I just had this conversation with my husband, Kevin. I swear to God. I made the joke of him. Do you remember that time that Brian Setzer was responsible for...
I was going to use the word Brian Setzer.
Brian Setzer was responsible for making everybody, like, swing twice.
Or what's, like, the name
so
of
he
the
was
song?
In Stray...
What was the song?
Well,
Stray Cat Strut, yeah.
And then when he was... he did Jump, Jive, and Whale when
Jump,
he was Brian Setzer
yes.
Orchestra.
I was trying to think of that all morning.
And now I like to bring up my favorite visual interpretation of why this is garbage people doing garbage things.
Fucking hate this song.
If anybody's a big fan of Sex and the City, and if you're gay, you are. if you're a big fan of Sex and the City, there's an episode where Carrie is dating a guy who I think actually just has, like, adult ADHD. But one of the things is he wears pork pie hats and he plays bass in a jazz band.
Oh, no.
And, it's an episode that really does a loving send-up of the short period of time where everybody owned a zoot suit.
Well, all right, so... I feel like this song happened because the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones got big for a second and people didn't know the difference between big band and ska.
I really think it was Brian Setzer. I think it was Brian Setzer
giving... Did Brian Setzer give the ska and they didn't know the difference between ska and Brian Setzer?
Brian Setzer gave us... Well, because he had done Rock This Town.
Well, sure, but that's old as hell. Comparatively.
Well, but so it was already in the cultural vernacular. So then people who were...
But ska got really big for a hot second.
But not until well after this, I don't feel.
Oh, no.
Really?
No Doubt's first songs were ska.
But No Doubt's first songs were ska, but
and
No Doubt's first songs were in a vacuum. Mighty Mighty Boss Stones.
No, they weren't, because you had the impression that I get.
But I thought it was 98.
No, you had Safe Ferris' cover of Come On Eileen. That stuff was getting radio play.
I don't think... Was Safe Ferris' cover of Come On Eileen when we were in 7th grade?
I think so.
I wish we could... I don't know. I kind of think...
Boss Tones definitely were, because 3 episodes from now will be when I discovered music on my own. And the first albums I bought with my own money were Blink-182's Dude Ranch.
Okay.
Something by The Living End. They're not good. Don't... And the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones album with The Impression That I Get.
I remember getting Mighty Mighty Boss Tones and Jamiroquai at the same time. Hey, no. Virtual Insanity is an incredibly... That song could be by Stevie Wonder. That thing is so freaking complicated. It's a really amazing piece
that song
of songwriting.
Well, what songs wouldn't be 10,000 times better if it was by Stevie Wonder? But you're right, that could be a Stevie Wonder song.
Oh, look at the sheet music for it. I mean, like, if you really analyze the incredible...
I wasn't saying woof because of that song. I was saying woof mostly because of his hats.
Oh, yeah, the hats are pretty bad. The Seuss hats. But no,
anyway, how much does Zootsy Riot suck?
You know what? I think there's a million better songs. I think Squirrel Nut Zipper's Hell would have been a better inclusion.
Sure.
I think
The Impression That I Get would have been a better inclusion.
But I'm not sure... I really thought it came out around the same time Mariah Carey's Honey did.
No. By this time, let's face it, By the Boss Tones is out.
Damn.
I'm almost positive. Because it's not long after this that I pick it up, and I don't pick it up new.
They're nobody when they're in Clueless, and they do...
Yeah, because that song's in Clueless, man.
But that's like 94, 95, but that was they were nobodies, and it was a totally different song that was 3 albums earlier.
Okay, so...
Because it's... The place and the name of the place escapes me. Rip, 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 and then he jumps off the stage at the end of the song.
That's not The Impression That I Get.
No, but that's what I'm saying. That was what was in Clueless in 95.
Oh, okay.
So I think, I don't remember honestly really well, but I'm pretty sure.
This is the time that liking Real Big Fish will not get you to be like, what?
I thought that was a little bit closer to...
That's this. This is the sellout album.
I totally believe you because you do know ska a million times better than
yeah,
I do.
I mean, I was into ska.
My mom was super into
I never
swing
had a checkerboard belt or anything like that. But I definitely went to some... I mean, we're in Jersey. I went to some Catch-22 shows.
You didn't have
I went
choice.
To some Less Than Jake shows, for sure.
I'm not big into Streetlight, and I've seen Streetlight a couple times.
Yeah, how could you not? You can't avoid that shit.
Zoot Suit Riot
there's
is...
There's a cultural aspect of this song that I fucking think is disgusting. The Zoot Suit Riots were a real thing.
Oh.
Okay, so...
Learn me.
California, in the late 40s, Mexicans were largely wearing the Zoot Suit. And... There was a day where a bunch of sailors went through, I forget which town in California, and just started beating the Mexicans because they thought that they were being, by wearing these baggy suits, these zoot suits, they were being disrespectful and unpatriotic. And also there was this undertone that they were probably fucking the white women. And so they went and they pulled them out of bars and streetcars and beat them and pissed on them. A bunch of sailors.
Okay, so I used to think I had a problem with Hey Soul Sister by Train for the appropriating use of Hey Soul Sister, because obviously a lyric like that is a little bit like, hey, I'm into black chicks, and I think that's a little, I think that's a little awkward as a song. That's way worse.
Oh, that alarm is the Wikipedia citation needed. If you could read the entry on Zoot Suit Riot, sir.
I will gladly. Lyrically, the song's narrative revolves around the Los Angeles Zoot Suit Riots of the 1940s, though Perry has stated the song makes no overt political or social commentary regarding the events. In a 2009 interview, I have a hard time believing they were interviewed in 2009. In a 2009 interview, he elaborated
on... still exists for some reason.
Because they gotta keep selling sneakers. In a 2009 interview, he elaborated on its significance, saying, I guess it seemed like a Pachuco?
I think that's the group of the Mexicans that were wearing okay. the Zoot Suits at the time.
It seemed
keep
like
in mind, this band's from Portland, fucking Oregon. Or some...
If no, you need
Eugene,
to understand...
Oregon, maybe? I'm sorry, Portlandia.
About to say, no, Portlandia is the best thing about Portland. I guess it seemed like a Pachuco rallying cry that could double as a dance anthem for those of us interested in swing music and culture at a time when no one else was. It was an expression of proud marginalism. That's not deep, but there you go. Is he...
This guy's name is Steve Perry. I didn't think there could be a worse Steve Perry in music, but here you go.
Did he just say being into swing music is the equivalent of the plight of beaten and pissed on Mexicans?
Yep. Fuck this guy. Fuck this song. This song appropriates the idea of a bunch of minorities getting beaten for the clothes they were wearing to throw back a bottle of beer, pull a comb through your hair. Fuck you.
It's like that fucking, it's like that meme going around that says, being into lumberjack style is appropriation of the hardworking life yes. of the lumberjack. And I'm like, seriously, go cry at your men's rights rally.
This, taking this and like a terrible thing that happened and turning it into a song about nothing.
That is utterly insane. You know, this went from a bad song to a bad song that
Here's
I take issue with.
It's called The Ferguson Dance. Like, you know, you can't do that. And just, that's what this basically is doing.
And unfortunately, what's even worse is in a lot of ways, it's relying on the fact that that is a culturally misunderstood term. It's using the fact that you don't, if it was him trying to bring, you know, awareness.
But it's nothing.
It's nothing. It's banal nonsense. Wow. Like the song less now.
Fuck that guy. That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks again to Nico. We'll be back with him next week. We'll have Barbie Girl, we'll have some R&B, we'll have Radiohead. We'll talk about some noteworthy songs from that time that weren't on now, and we'll get some freshman English class reads on these tracks from around the web. If you like the show, there's a couple of things you can do. You can head on over to cageclub.me to check out the rest of the Cage Club network. You can follow me on Twitter for updates and news. Eventually, the show will get its own Twitter, but until then, it's Molly_ringworm. That's worm with a U. And we would really love to hear from you. If you have your own stories, memories, hot takes on these songs, and you can tell us how wrong we were about something, write into the mailbag at nowandagaincast@gmail.com. We'd love to read some of your opinions on the air. You know, start a little discussion with the people who are listening to this. Everyone has memories of these songs, so please feel free to write in. And until next week, I'm Chris Mattiello. Keep bopping your way through life.